Hello and welcome to this very special bonus episode of Real Life Ghost Stories, where I am joined by the wonderful Jim Harold. If you don't know who Jim is a paranormal podcaster who has been on the scene for almost 20 years, and he hosts Jim Harold's Campfire and the Paranormal Podcast, among others. Jim has just released a book called True Ghost Stories, Jim Harold's Campfire, Volume 6. And judging by the stories that he tells in today's interview, it is well worth checking out. As always, this interview was recorded remotely, so the sound quality may be slightly different to what you are used to, but it is still fine and perfectly listenable and generally good quality, I would say. And as always, the links to where you can find all of Jim's work and, of course, the link to purchase his new book, True Ghost Stories, will be available in the description of this episode. I hope you enjoy it. Hello and welcome to this very special bonus episode of Real Life Ghost Stories, where I am joined by the one and only, the wonderful Mr. Jim Harold. Jim, hello, how are you?
Hey, how are you? Thank you so much for having me on again, Emma. It's such a joy to talk with you and talk about spooky stuff, our favorite thing, right?
Our absolute favorite thing in the world. And it is always a pleasure to have you on. I love having you on. And there may be some people who don't know you, who are listening. So could you tell us a bit about yourself? Who are you? Why are you here? What do you do? And how did you get into it?
Well, I'm a full-time podcaster. I've been podcasting on the paranormal since 2005 when I started a show called The Paranormal Podcast, which as far as I know, is the longest continuously running paranormal podcast on the internet. Then in 2009, I introduced another podcast, which is probably my most popular. It's called Jim Harold's Campfire, and it's basically what it sounds like. It's basically people calling in and telling their true stories of the supernatural, and that's been a real blessing, that show. And I do this full time. I love it. I'm blessed. And I'd love to talk about spooky stuff.
So how did you get started into podcasting about spooky stuff?
Well, there were like two things at play. First of all, I was a frustrated broadcaster. I'd gone to school for broadcasting, TV and radio, more TV than radio, actually, and ended up working in the business. But I worked on the business side of the business, not in front of the camera or front of the microphone. And come 2005, I was kind of frustrated because, like, man, I went to school for this. I always wanted to do this. I'm never going to get to do this. I heard about this thing called podcasting. And I said, you know, I listened to some of the shows and I'm like, well, I could do at least as good as that. So then I said, okay, what am I going to podcast on? And I thought, about, you know, I'm not going to add anything on politics. I don't want to argue with people. I'm not going to add anything on sport. Music you can't really do. What fascinates me? What would be a good thing to do a podcast about? And I'm like, I got it. Since I was like a little kid in primary school, I was fascinated with the paranormal. I always go to the library and look for the paranormal books. There's a really old TV show that when I was a wee little kid, I used to watch called In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy. Loved that show. Unsolved Mysteries. Loved to listen to talk radio shows about the paranormal and the supernatural. And I thought, this will be great because I'll get to scratch my broadcasting itch. And then I'll get to scratch my paranormal itch and I'll get to interview these people and I'll have it figured all out in 6 months. I'll know what's going on with the universe. It didn't turn out like that. And I never thought about it was being my job, and it's been my full-time job for 12 years now. Never, never even thought of that. I thought of it as a hobby. So it's kind of neat to be able to do your hobby as a job. So I'm very lucky that.
So this is a bit of a random question, but I'm just curious. So you've been podcasting since 2005, which absolutely blows my mind. Like, you were genuinely you were straight out of the trap with podcasting right from the beginning. If you weren't a podcaster, what would your dream job be?
Well, see, it's kind of a cheat because I probably say something in the media, either traditional TV or radio. But I don't think that's a fair answer to the question because it's too close to what I already do. You know, and again, I consider myself an honest person, but I think I might like to be a lawyer. I think I could be a pretty good lawyer. I don't know. That's a tough question. That's really a tough question. But I think, you know, if I had to do over again, I'd do essentially what I did. But if I said, you can't do that, you got to do something else, I'd be interested in, to be involved in the law and hopefully in a way that was doing good and not like, you know, going around just suing people left and right.
Yeah. But I think I could do pretty. Have some morals.
Yeah. I think I could do pretty well with the law if I were starting from scratch.
Oh, that was not something that I expected you to say. I did expect you to say something in media and broadcasting.
Oh, yeah.
Because I knew about your broadcasting history. Yeah, but if we're leaving that aside, yeah, which is far yeah more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why. I just, over the years, I said, I could have done that. But, you know, of course, unless you believe in reincarnation, which I'm kind of on the fence about. But maybe there'll be a chance in the future.
So I think you and I share a very similar style of podcasting. I think that's probably why we have a shared listenership in a lot of ways, because I think that for both of us, respect for the listener is key. And I'm sure you've heard a lot of paranormal podcasts that kind of verge into comedy where they kind of make fun of the stories, et cetera, et cetera. And you and I don't do that. So how did you make that decision or even train yourself to be respectful of people's stories rather than try and analyze them down to the nth degree or to ridicule mm-hmm them?
Well, first of all, they're coming on the show in many cases being very vulnerable about something that's very personal. And in some cases, they've never told anyone. This is their first time going public with it. And as far as training myself, I just try to be a nice person to people. Mm. So I don't think that there was any special training involved. I will say that I just decided early on, okay, I'm inviting people to come around my electronic campfire here and tell their stories. Now, if you were doing that in a real life scenario, you wouldn't. We had a reporter years ago over here in the States by the name of Mike Wallace, and he was like an investigative reporter, and he would like, you know, well, you know, why didn't you do this and why didn't you do that? You wouldn't do that around a real campfire if somebody were telling their stories, would you? You'd just ask questions and want to know more. So I just thought we'd try to replicate that feel, and what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to have a discussion with you about your experience and respect it. And I do believe the vast majority of people who call into the shows are being sincere, that they're being straight with me. They're telling me the truth as they see it. So I find no need to quiz them about, you know, minute details and things like that, because I believe they're telling the truth. And I do think many of them have experienced something supernatural. And I think in these cases, sometimes there's two distinct possibilities. One, the person.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Making it up, or two, they've experienced something paranormal, because some of the things that we are told on the shows, and I'm sure it's the same for you, there's really no logical, quote, logical explanation. Some things there are, you know, I realize that not every leaky faucet is a ghost, or every time somebody goes into a house with a EMF meter, it's haunted. I get that. But many of the stories we hear are so incredible that really there are only two explanations. And I think the vast, vast majority of people are being very sincere.
Do you find it difficult to prep yourself to record episodes of Campfire in particular, because, you know, there's some days where I feel like, oh, I am struggling to get myself together to read these stories, but I'm reading them so I can put myself into a space where I'm a lot more accepting of stories, etc. Whereas you're listening to people coming on and tell their stories, and they come on and dial in, and it's like an old school radio show. Like, how do you prep yourself for that?
I just try to put my mindset into, I'm trying to be a friendly host, and I'm trying to invite them in around that electronic campfire and be accepting and so forth. And it's like any other job. I mean, as much as I love it, there's some days you don't feel 100%. You know, some days you're like, oh, I wish I had today off. But that's where the work ethic comes in, I think. And I'm sure you experience the same thing. And I think that's the difference almost in any kind of endeavor, podcasting specifically, is that sometimes you do it when you don't 100% feel like it, but you're a professional and that's your job to be there. And it's also your job to do the best job you can do. And if you're having a bad day, you need to do your best not to bring that into the studio, not to bring that into the call. I'm setting aside all that stuff, and now I'm focused on this one person.
Yeah, and I think it is like you said, a lot of the time the people who come on the show are vulnerable, as in they're opening themselves up to telling this story publicly, which inevitably opens you up to a certain level of possible ridicule or possible criticism. And I think it is very important that you kind of give those people the best version of yourself. And yes, on that note, and this is a question that I get asked all the time, and my answer changes pretty much every time I get asked this question. Do you think that working with the paranormal in this way has widened your perspective on life and opened your mind?
Well, I think I came into it with a relatively open mind. You know, I believed in a lot of this stuff before, but it widened my mind in this sense. Before, I was like, okay, well, because we cover everything from ghosts to UFOs to everything in between, and a lot of head scratchers and cryptids and all kinds of things, although it kind of leans ghosty. But the thing was, is that, okay, ghosts are dead people. UFOs are aliens. Cryptids are animals. You know, I was very sure going into all of this that I understood the explanations for each little subcategory. And now I'm not. So, for example, ghosts. You know, do I think sometimes ghosts are dead people? Yeah. And sometimes I think they're residual hauntings, which are basically replays. And then sometimes I wonder if they might, and I have a story, a great story in the book that talks about something like this. Are they sometimes time slips? And then if you look into science and you get into the idea of the multiverse, are there parallel existences going on at the same time? And sometimes we jump the track, like on a phonograph. You know, you kind of hit the needle and it goes over into the next track. And we get a glimpse of another parallel universe. So I'm more convinced than ever these things go on. I'm less convinced of the specific explanations.
That's such a good way of putting it. Because I always feel like I'm somehow more skeptical now. But maybe your way of putting it is actually probably leans more towards how I feel, in that I just don't think there's black and white explanations for all of these things. Like you said, cryptids, animals, ghosts, dead people, UFOs, aliens. Maybe it's not as simple as that. And I heard a story recently, a friend of mine told me a story on the podcast, where this woman turned around in her house and there was just a man, like a young man, kind of late teens, sitting on her sofa. And he stood up and looked at her and said, well, you're all right. And then he almost like he stepped into, like it was like he had unzipped reality and stepped into something else rather than just disappearing or fading from view. She said it was like he literally stepped out of reality into somewhere else. And it honestly blew my mind.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of stories like that are just mind blowing. I mean, there's stories where people will see a ghost, and the ghost, the quote ghost, seems almost as frightened by them as they are by the ghost. So who's the ghost? Are we the ghost? So it really makes you think. And so people will say, what have you learned? They're going to expect, well, I understand all of this stuff, which I don't. I think people have pieces and parts. I don't know that anybody really understands it all. But our existence is way more complicated than we understand. I'm convinced of that. For example, DNA has always been around, right? But it really wasn't figured out until the last 60, 70 years. It was always there. We didn't know about it. I mean, there could literally be a room full of my dead relatives standing behind me. But I might not be able to see that. It might be like ultraviolet light, right? I mean, it's totally possible. Mm. Hi, Mom. but the point being that there's so much we don't know. And I think that, and there's a saying about this, and I forget. I think the beginning of wisdom is realizing how much you don't understand. Now, that's where I part ways with science. I love science. I mean, what we're doing right now is amazing to me. You know, when I was in school for broadcasting, we would have had to buy satellite time. Now, granted, that was a million years ago. But the point being that science is great, but science has its limits. And I think that's where people who are very scientifically minded kind of fall into this trap. Ah, we know everything. We understand everything. And if something goes outside of the bounds of what we understand, it can't possibly be. Mm. And that's where I part ways. So I think there's a way to be logical. There's a way to be intelligent, but still leave space for the unknown. And that's what I try to do.
I think that's a really healthy way of viewing it as well. Kind of being open-minded skeptic. Because I think people see skeptic as a almost like a dirty word, you know, that you,
yeah.
If you're a skeptic, it means that you don't believe in anything. And that's not necessarily true.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And you have just literally, as we're recording this yesterday, you have released a new book. So May the 7th, called True Ghost Stories, Jim Harrell's Campfire Volume 6.
Yes.
And if people, you know, if people haven't listened to you before or don't know what you do, do you have any particular stories that you pull out at parties? Do you know what I mean? The stories that you're like, I'm going to stop you in your tracks. Because I know you've told T.I.'s time slip story on Real Life Ghost Stories before, but are there any that you love to shock people with?
Here's one from this book. Now, I have to say, sometimes it should be, it really, since we started the series 6 books ago, I called it True Ghost Stories. It should be True Ghost Stories and More, because there's some other stuff in there and some kind of head scratchers. And this one kind of falls into this this category, but I love the story. So this was a woman, I think she was in Idaho, named Jennifer. And this story goes back to the 1980s. She and her friend, she was 8 or 9 years old, they would go out on adventures. Now, over here in the States in that era, a lot of times, you know, before cell phones and texting and all that stuff, kids would go out in the morning, particularly in small towns. They would go out in the morning. They'd say, see you later, Mom. And they'd be back home by dinner. And that sounds unimaginable and frightening now, but that's the way, you know, people used to operate. So anyway, this day, Jennifer and her friend decide, you know what? We are going to go down the abandoned railroad tracks about 4 miles down to the lake. And the railroad tracks were right by Jennifer's house. So they said goodbye to mom and they set out to go to the lake, the local lake, 4 miles away. Pretty good walk. So they walked down these abandoned railroad tracks. And to be clear, this is important. There's one way in and there's one way out. So there's not any divergent tracks, parallel tracks, crossing tracks. That's one way in, one way out. So they walk about a mile and it's very, you know, heavily forested and so forth. And all of a sudden they come to a clearing. And in this clearing, there are some houses. And there's a lady putting up her laundry, her wash on a clothesline. And she's dressed in what we would have termed at the time a house dress, which still in the 80s, maybe I would say probably women of a certain age would wear house dresses. I know my grandma wore them. I think, you know, I don't think anybody wears those anymore, but it used to be a thing. So this woman's hanging her clothes on the line, and there's a couple of raspberry bushes there. And the woman starts talking to the kids, and she's very nice, very kind. And says, hey, girls, would you like some raspberries? And they're like, sure. So they take their shirts and they kind of hold them out like a basket. And the woman puts the raspberries in them. And it stains their shirt, which I'm sure their moms were happy about. And they're eating the raspberries and they're talking to the woman. She's just nice as could be. So they finish up the raspberries and they say, well, nice to meet you. Thanks for the raspberries. And they go about their way and they go down to the lake. And they're there for, you know, a few hours, and then they head back. And then they notice on their way back, there's a clearing about where that clearing was, but there's no houses. There's no clothesline. There's no raspberry bushes. And they're like, there's only one way in, one way out. What in the world's going on? And then they go home. They have the stains on their shirts, so they know that they actually went to this place, that they existed. It wasn't a figment of their imagination. But then, poof, it was gone. So Jennifer, being a very intelligent little girl, went to her grandma because she thought maybe grandma might be able to tell her something about it. And she said, Grandma, the weirdest thing happened. We did this walk. We met this woman. There were these houses about a mile away from here in this clearing. And we came back and they were gone. And she said, well, I don't know, honey, but I do know there used to be houses in there in the 1920s before the railroad track was built. And that's the story of the mysterious Mrs. Raspberry. And the thing is, Jennifer, you know, you might think, oh, this is just an adult, you know, probably 35, 40 years of age, because this story was from several years ago, maybe just misremembering. So she knew she was going to come on the campfire. She signed up. So she called her friend who was with her that day. And she went over it chapter and verse. And her friend remembered the railroad tracks, the clothesline, the lady hanging up the clothes, the raspberries, and everything not being there. So it was not simply somebody thinking something they saw on television or something like that. This happened. And we've had numerous cases like that over the years where something is there and then it's gone the next day or a few hours later. And that really gets into that whole question of the nature of our existence. And those are the stories I really love.
They really do something, I think, to your like a fundamental belief system when you hear stories like that, where it just shakes everything up a little bit. Because yeah. Like you said earlier, who's really the ghosts, you know, especially when yeah. You have these stories of people who see a ghost and the ghost is just as shocked to see them.
Exactly. So that's one of my favorites out of the new book. And I thought it was neat because there's a ghostly aspect to it. She's kind of a ghost, but then there's a time slip aspect to it, possibly because those houses were built in the 20s and demolished when the railroad came in. And then there's also possibly a parallel universe aspect to it. Maybe they jumped into a parallel universe where those houses were never torn down. I don't know, but I believe her. I mean, and that's a perfect example of what I was saying before, Emma. These are cases where either she's telling the truth, she's lying, or it's telling the truth, it's supernatural, she's lying. And I don't think she's lying.
No, and I don't think people would go out of their way to,
why?
put themselves in that situation to tell you a lie. Do you know what I mean?
It's not like, you know, I'm not Joe Rogan. I don't have, you know, I have a relatively popular paranormal podcast, but it's not like they're going to become famous. Or there's no, as they say, there's no percentage in it. There's no reason to make something like that up. And I totally believe Jennifer, and she was extremely level-headed, and I totally believe her story.
I also remember years ago I found this like a message board, really old school message board post on like an Irish messaging board. And it was, have you ever seen anything unnerving or paranormal? And I'm not joking. I spent about 3 days just solidly reading this forum and reading people's replies. Some of them were just fantastic. And one of them was quite short, but you know, similar to Jennifer's situation. So it was a group of friends, and they were, when they were kids, maybe in the early 90s, and they were cycling through this wooded area. And as they were cycling through, they noticed this little cottage, and there was a woman outside it. And they were like, oh, we don't remember there being a house there. But she looked horrified to see them. Like, she looked as shocked to see them as they were to see her. And then similarly, when they went back, there was no cottage there. You know, and there had been maybe many years ago.
Right.
So these situations, these sort of, you know, nature of the universe, multiverse, time slip type situations, they seem to happen more regularly than we might think.
And the thing is that, think about it. If you're, well, let's just say now we're in 2024, and let's say for some reason we see a ghost from 2075, what we consider a ghost, but it's actually somebody from the future in 2075, and they're dressed in kind of weird garb. And we don't understand it. If we saw something like that, we might think that they're visitors from outer space. We might think, who knows what people will be wearing or not wearing at that point. So, I mean, it might be incredibly shocking to us. So you have to put yourself in that person's shoes, what that must be like to see maybe somebody from the future.
Do you have another story before I let you go?
Yeah, this one actually is one... there's one particular phenomenon. I won't spoil it by saying what it is, but there's one, and this is not in this book. This will be in a future book. But there's one that happens a lot more than I realize it happens, or realized before I started the shows. So anyway, this particular person is a healthcare worker, some kind of respiratory tech or something like that. I can't remember exactly. And coincidentally, from my home state here in the States of Ohio. So that was kind of fun. Anyway, she was at work one day, and she had a patient that needed to be transported to an area for a test. So it was her, it was one of the transport people who pushed the beds and so forth, and it was the patient in the bed. And they loaded into this big freight elevator on this hospital floor. And she looked up, and there was a passenger elevator across the way. And she saw a bunch of people getting into it. And then, you know, as you do, you go in and then you turn around. Well, there was this one woman who looked really familiar to her. And she turned around, and our caller realized she was looking at a perfect copy of herself. Then all day she's thinking, oh, my God, what was that? Was it just somebody look like me? You know, what was this? What was going on? And it really bothered her, but she had a job to do, so she had to do her job and see patients and so forth. So anyway, the end of the day, you know, she's really dog tired. You know, she's stressed out about this weird thing that happened. She's standing at the passenger elevator, minding her own business. So she walks into the elevator. Then she turns around, as you do. And then she looked up and saw the freight elevator, and there was a transport person, there was a patient, and there was a young woman. And that young woman was as shocked as she was, because it was her. And that's the story.
I wish people could see my facial expressions during that story. Because I didn't quite know where it was going. And then when, oh my God, oh wow, that's, I don't even know where to start with that, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, I'm even getting chills telling it. It's such a great story. And again, medical professional, very level-headed, no reason to make it up. I actually know the hospital system that it's in. I'm very familiar with it. I did not say it publicly. I didn't disclose it on because it's in my area. But the point being, an amazing story about the weirdness of our existence, which tends to once in a while give you a little bit of a peek. Not a lot, but once in a while it just says, look at this. What do you think about this?
I think the interesting thing about this story is that you wouldn't recognize yourself immediately. I really don't think you would. I think if you saw a version of yourself, you know, an identical twin of you, it would take you a few seconds to be like, oh, that's me, because we obviously only ever see a mirror image of ourselves, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So it would make sense that you would look and go, oh, that person's really familiar, before realizing, oh, that person is actually me. Brilliant.
Yeah. And that happens. I don't know about you, but doppelgangers come up a lot more than I ever expected. I mean, I was familiar with it, the term and so forth. And I always thought, oh, it was just kind of a funny thing. Oh, it's your doppelganger. It's like your twin. But I mean, it's very, and particularly in paranormally charged places, haunted places. And a lot of times there's a trickster element, it seems like the doppelganger's trying to convince you that they are a loved one or whatever the case may be. So I find it to be a fascinating subject, and I don't really know what to make of it.
No, I don't know what to make of it either. And I regularly ask this question on the show. I'm like, what is the goal for doppelgangers? You know, what are they, first of all? What is happening that they're throwing up versions of your loved one, or in this case, versions of you? And what is the goal? Is it just to confuse? Is it just to, you know, frighten or frustrate people? Or is there something else to it? I don't know either.
Don't know. But that's the fun part. You know, part of the fun is the mystery of it. And I don't know that we'll all ever have the answers to those mysteries, but it's fun to investigate them.
It definitely is. And I do find, you're right, doppelganger stories come up a lot. They come up a lot for people. And every time they come up, I'm like, oh no, because I find them really disturbing. Because what would you, I don't know what you would do. I don't know how I would respond.
A traditional ghost, you know, oh, that's a loved one and things. I do believe that. Don't get me wrong. I believe that is part of the picture. I do think people have visitations from loved ones. I think people have signs from loved ones. I do think sometimes ghosts are dead people. But we had... early on in the show, I had an interview with Lloyd Auerbach, who was a great parapsychologist. I've interviewed him several times over the years. And he told a story where he was doing an investigation for a TV show over here. And what was happening is there had been a murder scene, and people would report seeing the murder happen. And they would see the killer, and they would see the person who was murdered. And they would almost see it replayed. But the weird thing was, is that obviously the murder victim is dead, but the killer was still very much alive and in prison, like 50 miles away. So what were they really seeing? You know, so it just, once you go down this rabbit hole, there are no easy answers.
No, and I feel like you end up with more and more questions rather than any answers at all.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
Jim, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. And I'm very conscious of not taking up a huge amount of your time because I know that you're a very busy man. Can you tell people where they can find you and what you're currently working on?
Well, I would guide anybody that listens to this podcast. If you haven't had an opportunity, listen to Real Life Ghost Stories. Then, after that episode's over, then listen to Jim Harold's Campfire, and you can find that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And then the new book. And the nice thing about these books, you can read them in any order. And I'd recommend starting with this one because I think it's the best one. I'm biased. True Ghost Stories, Jim Harold's Campfire, Volume 6. You can find it on Amazon in the UK. And you can find it at various outlets, but probably in the UK, the easiest one is Amazon. And you can find all the links to it at jimharold.com. JIMHARold.com. And Emma, thank you so much for the opportunity. It's really been a lot of fun, and it's great to talk to a kindred spirit in the supernatural.
pardon the pun. Thank you so much, Jim. It's been an absolute pleasure as always, and good luck with the book and continued success with the podcast.
Thank you, and stay spooky.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.